Welcome to Faith and Family on this Monday, October 14th. I'm Andy Bates. Glad to be with you this week. We're continuing our discussion on choices in education this week. Last week, we had a fulfilling week as we started off talking about our choices in education and covered mostly homeschool choices last week. This week, we're going to talk about day school options. And so we'll talk about Lutheran schools and classical schools, residential schools and public schools this week. So a variety of options when it comes to choices in education and helping parents make informed decisions when it comes to raising their children in the one true faith. So we're going to get into that discussion here in a little bit. We're going to talk with Reverend John Hill of Mount Hope Lutheran Church and School in Casper, Wyoming in just a second. As we continue our discussion today, I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website. Go to KFUO.org and then go to the sponsor section. Look for the CUW logo. Click on that, and that'll take you to the Concordia University, Wisconsin website. You can find out all about the great programs that they have to offer all around the world, including one right here in St. Louis, Missouri. So be sure to check that out. If you'd like to join the conversation today, we're going to be talking about classical Lutheran education. What is it, and how might it benefit families? So we're going to talk about that with Pastor John Hill in just a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so. In the St. Louis area, the number is 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727. Or if you don't want to call, say you want to email, you can send your email to family@kfuo.org. You want to make sure you get that in there. family@kfuo.org. Well, joining us by phone this morning is Reverend John Hill from Mount Hope Lutheran Church and School in Casper, Wyoming. Good morning, Pastor Hill.
Good morning, Andy.
Thanks for joining us this morning and talking about education from a classical Lutheran education perspective.
Oh, very glad to do it. I am very happy to speak about classical Lutheran education.
Wonderful. Not too long ago, we had someone on the show you might know. Pastor Garwood came on the program and talked with us about his book on marriage.
Yes. So. Yes, he's an associate pastor here at Mount Hope in Casper.
Wonderful. So we're starting to talk with folks in Casper quite a bit, it sounds like.
Sounds good.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then also Mount Hope.
Right. I grew up in Texas, and when I finished my high school, I went off to school at our Concordia, at the time, college in Ann Arbor, now Concordia University, and did my undergraduate work preparing to go to the seminary. So I focused on classical languages or the biblical languages, Greek and Hebrew, and I'd also had some Latin, and when I finished there, I went to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, and I focused on my exegetical studies, biblical studies at that time. My first call was to a congregation in North Dakota in Forbes, Bethlehem Lutheran Church, and then I was called here to Mount Hope in Casper, and I've been here almost 18 years.
Wow.
We started a school here shortly after I came, and not long after that, we decided to pursue the classical model of education, and we've been working with that ever since.
And so the school has been around for about 15, 16 years?
Right. We had a kindergarten for 2 years. And when we had enough students, we added first grade and added a grade a year from there. So I would say we've had a first grade here for 15 years.
Wow. And you mentioned that as the school developed, you decided to go with a classical education model.
Right.
What prompted that?
Well, we were looking at a variety of options as to how we could provide the best education that we knew how. And the decision was made based both on interests in our Lutheran theology and passing on the Lutheran faith to the students that were in our care. And also, we believed that the classical model provided a very vigorous and in-depth education that would serve our students best.
And what role do do parents play in that, in the school and in education of children at Mount Hope Lutheran?
The parents have, their role is primarily one of supporting the students at home. We have a great deal of homework that the kids will have from time to time, and the parents assist with that. A lot of it has to do with their just simply supporting us and supporting the choice of education that we have. And we've got some great parents at our school that do a fine job of working with their students.
So you chose classical education, and you've been using that model for since nearly the beginning of the school. How is that going now? How many have you had students graduate from the school?
We go through the eighth grade now, mm-hmm. and so we've had a number of students come through the eighth grade with us, and we're very pleased at how they have done. The model is a challenging one because it's very content-rich and is fairly demanding upon the teachers, but we've been very, very pleased with the outcome. Maybe just to sketch out a few things that are unique with our school. We have a very strong focus on the language arts, phonics, for the young children as they're preparing and learning to read. And we give a great deal of attention to just the nuts and bolts of language, spelling, grammar, composition, and we spend a good bit of time with that. We prefer to use actual literature to hand to our children to learn to read, and so the younger ones are reading fairy tales or Aesop's fables, and as they get older, we put translations of some of the classics into their hands or some of the great English language literature, and so we really like to challenge them in the reading that they do. We also have a pretty strong history, focus on the history. And so the children are led through history studies with a great deal of focus on Western civilization in particular.
So there's a pretty strong emphasis on reading throughout the entire education.
Right. And that's obviously at the very foundation of education. You can't learn ultimately in the long run if you can't read and read well and read with understanding. And so we really believe that the method that we have here contributes to that.
Can you give us a primer and an understanding of the classical education model? What makes up the classical education model, and how is it different from a traditional school that someone might attend, like a public school or any other Lutheran school?
Sure. There are some foundational things that are involved with it. I think a great appreciation of the treasures of Western civilization, literature, poetry, music, art, history, and so forth, sort of form the content of what we want to teach. We want to pass on a culture, a tradition to the students. And the historic classical pedagogy then involves teaching that content by way of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, the old classical trivium, as it's called. And so we use that as the pattern, if you will, by which we teach this very rich content to our students. And some of the differences would be indicated by that use of historic literature whenever possible in our classrooms. It's going to be marked by that very strong focus on language. In fact, we start teaching Latin to our students starting in the third grade, and we find that there are numerous arguments for teaching Latin to our students, but One of the things that's at the root of that is just simply the fact that when they learn Latin especially, or any foreign language, but they learn language itself better, and that makes them better equipped as students as they get older.
Why particularly Latin?
Any inflected language like German or Greek would work, but Latin is preferable because it's the historic language of Western civilization, and it also informs about two-thirds of the vocabulary of the English language. So as you think in terms of preparing students for taking the SAT or the ACT, mm-hmm. or just simply reading and encountering words that they have not seen before, teaching them Latin is a great way to prepare them for that. It also just is a great language for helping them to understand the structure of our language, the parts of speech, and it's really, in many ways, the best way for them to understand those things.
And if they're going to study the sciences, particularly any of the biology, anatomy and physiology, things like that, anything with scientific terms, I would think that Latin would probably be quite helpful that foundation.
Yes, of course, right. Most of the sciences are, their language is rooted in Latin. The legal tradition is rooted in Latin. Many of our theological terms are rooted in Latin, and so yes, it's just a great language for preparing for any of those fields.
So that could really benefit them not only in grade school, but down the road as well, if they're thinking a vocation along those lines, like you said, in the sciences, in a legal field, or in theology, that language could really be beneficial.
Right.
You mentioned that it's a classical education model as a way for passing on the culture, and certainly language is part of that. What other parts of culture are passed on using the classical education model?
You picked up on a part of my interest in this that I think is of great concern as a pastor, and if we have pastors that are listening, I'm sure they're very sympathetic to this. That we confirm our students and we watch them drift away from the church and drift away really from the culture that we have. And I've come to realize that the whole issue of enculturation or socialization, if you will, is really one of our great duties as parents and as pastors, as the church, as teachers, our schools. We're passing on a culture, and culture has to do with having competence in language.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about the use of the English language, but also the critical use of terminology, the debates on the pro-life versus pro-choice. There's a language distinction there that our kids, their ears need to become attuned to those sort of language issues. We want to pass on values. And the passing on of values is a long, arduous task, I believe. Obviously, we teach them God's Word on a regular basis, and we urge our parents to do so, in any parents who have their children in any school setting. But we can do that in a very deliberate way here as a Lutheran school and as a classical school. Then we can examine those values from the perspective of historic Western values, the great literature, which is always exploring these issues. And then enculturation also has to do with things like rituals and etiquette. And so our worship life, our family life, just the way we go about living our lives, this is a great context for passing on a foundation of these things. We really believe that we're an important partner with our parents, with the home, mm-hmm. in passing these things on.
Have you had the opportunity? I know the school's only been, operating about 15, 16 years, but have you had an opportunity to see that, that culture being passed on, in a sense, to see the fruits of the labor?
We have, as you can imagine, we have varying degrees of success.
Sure.
But I have seen that with some of our kids that have gone on and are now in college, and just doing a great job. We're very, very thankful for that. Again, it's we recognize that it's a partnership with the home,
mm-hmm.
and so the church and the school form a three-way partnership, if you will, in this enculturation or the bringing up of a child. But where we can be successful with that three-way partnership, we are very thankful to see great results.
I would think that it depends greatly on the parents, and that's where the God-given vocation is for teaching children. Without much involvement from parents, do you see much success, if you will?
Not as much as you can well imagine. And one of the great challenges, I guess, that we recognize here, and I think any Lutheran school would recognize this, is that we receive the students in our school in whatever circumstances they come to us.
Mm-hmm.
Even as far as the classical side of things, one of the things we recognize that we're doing is oftentimes we're passing on an education that we as adults did not ourselves receive. Classical education really was not a model of education when I went through school, and much of what I gained from it I've had to gain either through the languages that I've learned, through our Concordia's college and seminary, but also through reading and study. And not all parents have access to that or are as interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of our challenges.
We're talking with Reverend John Hill, pastor at Mount Hope Lutheran Church and School in Casper, Wyoming, about classical Lutheran education today. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question about classical Lutheran education, you can do so. You can call us here in the studio at 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, it's 1-800-730-2727, or you can send an email to family@kfuo.org. We're talking about classical Lutheran education today, and I've talked with other folks about classical education before. Is there a difference between classical Lutheran education and say, another classical school?
Oh, great question. And yes, in fact, again, this is one of our challenges, is that some of the other theological traditions have made great progress in advancing classical education. The Calvinist tradition has really kind of started, in many ways, restarted the movement in our own country, and Roman Catholicism did not abandon classical education as thoroughly as many other parts of the country, and so in many ways they're ahead of us. There are a lot of materials, curricular materials out there from these various traditions, but classical Lutheran is a little harder to come by, and fortunately, I believe we're starting to make some inroads on this also. The Lutheran, of course, focuses very strongly on our theology and practice. Luther himself, at the time of the Reformation, urged the renewal of education, and in particular, what we can honestly describe as a classical Lutheran education. Luther's focus was very strongly on the languages, and that was because of his emphasis on the Word of God. We want an education that enables people to hear, to read, to understand, meditate upon God's Word, and the ability to handle language is critical to that. And this is one of the reasons why Luther urged the schools not just to teach in German, even though he translated the Bible into German. He really strongly urged the teaching of Latin, first of all, and then other biblical languages as that became possible for some of the more talented students. So that focus on language, on the Word of God, would be a very key emphasis that Luther himself urged. I would say also just a good strong emphasis on history. Luther really loved the histories, and he urged the reading of those. He believed that was an account of the story of God's dealings with man, man's failures, as well as the blessings that came over the course of history, that these are great lessons for shaping and forming students and their understanding of the law as well as of the gospel.
So classical education and classical Lutheran education really have deep roots. How far back can we go and find that model of classical education?
Well, the classical education itself arose in Greece. I think you could first identify it, and of course the Romans picked it up and employed it in their own way. It was at the time that the Roman Empire was crumbling and decaying that Christians in particular began to labor on a synthesis of classical and Christian education. So you think of folks like St. Augustine, of course, but then later Boethius and Cassiodorus, lesser known church fathers, but they did some really fascinating work on providing what we could honestly call a classical Christian school. The Lutheran part of that, of course, didn't come about until the Lutheran Reformation, but Luther was a big proponent of it. Melanchthon, his co-worker, really picked up on it and developed the whole model for Lutheran lands, Germany in particular. And our own Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is a very direct heir of that sort of education, at least in its first 50 to 80 years or so.
And I think I've seen it starting to pick up. I know I've come across more than one classical Lutheran school in the last 2 years and seeing more encouragement for and support for classical Lutheran schools in various settings.
Yes, our own Wyoming district here has wholeheartedly embraced classical education. We don't have a very deep history of Lutheran schools. Only one of our schools is really older than 30 years or so. But our four elementary middle schools are all classical in their orientation. And you'll find many other areas in the country where there is a growing interest in it. I think it's a slow but growing interest. And frankly, I think it's what you see reflected in the dissatisfaction with education nationwide in the government school system. You will also see reflected to some extent also in our Lutheran schools. And so many of our teachers and educators are looking at alternatives and asking, how can we do this better?
Is there a student that the classical education model would be ideal for, or a student perhaps that it would not be a good match for?
Classical education is a great model for any student. The one comment I think that would go with that, though, is that the more advanced one goes in classical education, the more difficult it gets. And so some of the upper reaches of what is possible with classical education is probably not going to be for everyone. But just the basic foundation, the orientation, both in terms of language and in terms of passing on the riches of our culture and of our theology, that is absolutely for every student. And we find that the use of phonics to teach to read, that's great even for kids that have various challenges or disabilities. The very orderly classroom, a strong teacher-centered education with direct instruction.
Let's pick up with that when we come back from the break. We need to take a quick break, and we'll continue talking about that when we come back from the break. Stick around for more on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Many women love the smell of a newborn child, and now there's a scientific explanation. The University of Montreal released a study saying it's due to the woman's neural networks in her brain associated with reward. The baby smell triggers this neurological circuit. They tested women by exposing them to the smell of someone else's newborn, all the while having a brain imaging test. The research shows mothers are more likely to respond to the smell of newborns than women who've never given birth. It's a shame men weren't part of the study. I can tell you from experience, we too are affected by the delightful smell of newborns. I've got a news flash for the scientists. God wired our brains that way so we'd be over the moon in love with our children.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
They guide us. They teach us. They're there with us in some of our best times and some of our worst. Pastors are truly a blessing from God. October is Pastor Appreciation Month, and KFUO wants to help you show your pastor just how much you care. Enter your pastor in the KFUO Pastor Appreciation Contest. Simply answer the question, "Why I appreciate my pastor," and don't forget to tell us who your pastor is. Then send that response via mail or email to KFUO Radio. You and your pastor could win two identical prize packages, one for your pastor and one for you to keep yourself. The prize packages include a Grace Digital Wi-Fi radio, a KFUO water bottle, Give Thanks music CD, and much more. Visit our website at kfuo.org for the complete rules and to see the prize package.
Contest ends October 31st. KFUO staff members will pick the winner, and the winner will be notified and then announced on the air. All decisions are final.
Start your day right with the Word of God in prayer. We'll talk with special guests.
We'll study the Bible and hear a brief sermon from our guest pastor. Join me, Andy Bates,
and Craig D'Onofrio, weekday mornings 7 to 9:30 Central for his time on Worldwide KFUO.
The messenger of good news.
Weekday mornings beginning at 7 a.m. on KFUO.
A program to recruit Jews to move to a southern town is revitalizing a Jewish congregation in Dothan, Alabama. The Jewish businessman who created the program, Larry Blumberg, says membership in Dothan's Temple Emmanuel was dwindling.
Our congregation was aging, and the prospects for the future were not very good. So we were trying to find a way to reinvigorate our community and see if we could repopulate it.
Lumberg created a $1 million fund to help recruit Jewish families to move to Dothan 5 years ago. Six new Jewish families with 18 people have moved there because of the program, which offers families as much as $50,000 to relocate. Blumberg says worship attendance has since doubled.
We have, I think, revitalized our community here.
Rabbi Lynn Goldsmith says the program could be a blueprint to encourage Jews to move to other southern towns with Jewish congregations that are fighting to remain open. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We're continuing our discussion on choices in education. Today we're talking about classical Lutheran education with Reverend John Hill of Mount Hope Lutheran Church and School in Casper, Wyoming. And before we went to break, Pastor Hill, we were talking about how classical Lutheran education might be a good choice for any student. And you had mentioned that the further along you get in your classical education, the more challenging it becomes.
Yes, I would even add to this that the ideal place for classical education is ultimately in the junior high and in the high school level. We unfortunately cannot provide a high school here, but that's where the rewards really become very, very great. However, even for those who are not equipped to get into some of the greater challenges of the language, the logic and the rhetoric, and in its deeper areas, every student benefits from it. And I guess I would just want to emphasize that it's a great model for any school.
You've mentioned that there are three main parts: the grammar, logic, and rhetoric. For those of us who are unfamiliar with classical education, can you give us an idea? Let's start with grammar. What is grammar?
Yeah, let me just sketch out briefly what those terms mean and sort of historically and how they apply in the classroom, the modern classroom, if you will. They're really just language terms,
mm-hmm.
and that's obvious with the term grammar. But what we mean by that is just sort of the basic form and structure of the language. And so for preschoolers, kindergartners, you're working on sounds and letters and combinations of letters and just basic handwriting things. And as you move further along, then you are spelling and using learning vocabulary. And, of course, learning to read is all a part of that. But then as they get older, then they begin to identify parts of speech, nouns, verbs, and the like. And they begin to understand the more in detail the language. And we challenge them to speak and to write with that, using that understanding. What is appropriate as students are working on grammar is there's a lot of memorization. There's a lot of imitation. Just like little children learn to imitate their parents and others that they hear and see, so we capture on that in the early years in particular, and just frankly a lot of practice. So the kids have to write, and we like to have them do a lot of reading. Also appropriate here at this point is a lot of direct instruction. This is a real challenge for the teacher, because the teacher is the knowledgeable one in the classroom. And we like to have the teacher working very directly with the students. Latin, the learning of Latin belongs, really with grammar, at least in its earlier stages. And, of course, a lot of literature and history, as we mentioned before. Logic, of course, or sometimes called dialectic, is a reference to the relationship between words or concepts or ideas. Logic would focus on the definitions of words or of terms, of various concepts. Historically, it means finding arguments or points of discussion for what you would write or what you would do in public speaking. And so one would read and study just to learn what those various topics are. And then, of course, there's formal logic, there's mathematical logic, there's a variety of different kinds of things. Some of our middle school students, we usually start them out just identifying basic fallacies, listening to an argument or an assertion and testing it to see whether it's true or false. And we find that to be just very important for teaching the student to learn, to think, to prepare for adulthood in a very complex world that we live in. So all of those things kind of belong to the logic or the dialectic stage. And then the third of those is rhetoric, and as the term implies, it has to do with public speaking, though more broadly it would have to do with a variety of forms of expression. And rhetoric itself is already learned and taught with the very beginning of language. Students develop an ear for language. They develop an ability to speak correctly. They learn to organize their thoughts. And we, as they get older, we teach them those things in a very deliberate way. First, by reading and or hearing good examples of it, and by imitating it, and then we begin to teach them further. And it really flowers when you get into high school, if you have the opportunity to do that. My own family, we have the great privilege of homeschooling our students, and so that's an opportunity that we try to take advantage of there, is to move them a little further along in the rhetoric.
We're talking with Reverend John Hill of Mount Hope Lutheran School, Church and School in Casper, Wyoming, about classical Lutheran education. If you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so. The number in St. Louis is 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, it's 1-800-730-2727, or you can send an email to family@kfuo.org. I'm hearing the language and history and literature, and you mentioned briefly math. Where does math and where does science fit into the curriculum?
Yes, that's historically what we call the sciences today were really a later part of the education. Once a person had mastered the trivium, the first three liberal arts of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, then they would branch out into the what were called the four mathematical arts. We live in a world today where there's a much greater expectation upon the sciences. But I'm convinced with my reading and studying of classical education that the teaching of math is really sort of the foundational, along with languages, is the foundational area of the sciences to focus on, because that provides them the tools they'll need to pick up any, you know, area of science later on. We do teach science here, and of course we do so from a very strong Christian creation worldview. We believe strongly that we need to equip our students to be prepared to enter into the government or the public system, where they're going to learn a very different worldview, and we want to prepare them to encounter that at that time. But really, at the foundation of it, just starting again at the very lowest grades, is a good strong teaching of math in our math curriculum. We give good time to that so that we can teach that adequately.
Many models of education in North America today emphasize free play or letting the child's interests lead the direction. You know, and even in Europe, like the Montessori method, is there a place for play or creativity or expression in the classical education model?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of times those models are designed with the understanding or with the idea that the child is a basically good person, and he has within himself sort of all the basics, the foundations of knowledge and of thought, and so you know, there's a temptation there, I think, with that very modernistic understanding to just allow the, you know, knowledge to come out of the student. The historic Christian tradition views the student as a sinner and as a fallen man, and therefore he must be taught and instructed. And this is kind of the idea of the teacher as the person who must impart knowledge to the student and guide and teach. But it's precisely within that context that I believe the greatest creativity is possible. We all have childhood memories of you know, our own education, and one of mine is of having a teacher put a blank piece of paper in front of me and asking me to do something of the artistic sort. And when the half hour or hour was done, I handed a blank piece of paper back, because I had no idea what to do. We had never been taught to draw. We'd never been taught any of the basics of art. Our students learn to draw. They do drawing exercises. As they get a little older, we teach them to do a one-point or a two-point perspective and just do some of the basics of those things. And we find that when the students actually know things and have been instructed in those, the ability to be creative is much, much greater. I don't know how many of our students have taken up writing just for the pleasure of writing their own fiction books. So I think this kind of education is really the most powerful way of providing a truly creative mind.
What In just a moment, I want to get an idea of what a typical day looks like. But before we do that, let's go to our caller. Jeremiah is calling. Jeremiah?
Yes. I had a question.
Sure, go ahead.
It was related to how a parent who has not been classically educated could effectively help in a homeschool or as a support to the school. How could a parent help if they're not classically educated?
Great question. Thank you, Jeremiah. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jeremiah, that's a great question, and one that I personally faced because I didn't receive that sort of education either. I would suggest, first of all, that a parent can educate himself, and you know the greatest teachers and educators here are really those who just love to learn. They love to read. They love to read literature, scientific literature. They love theology. So pursuing those things. There are a great deal of resources for homeschoolers in the classical education field. For parents who have the opportunity to send their child to a classical Lutheran school, there are great ways of supporting the teachers and the parents in that. Getting involved, of course, in the school board, or just encouraging the teachers in their efforts. But I would just encourage you as a parent, read. Find good literature. Read to your children. Read with your children. Pick good stuff. And then there's a host of literature out there. Our own Concordia Publishing House has published a book that gives a great insight into classical Lutheran education, and that's the book by Thomas Korchak, Lutheran Education. So there's some great resources out there.
Wonderful. So it really comes down to taking the time to, you may not have a classical Lutheran education background, but taking the time to read about it and learn about it so that you can then invest the time with your child.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. And if you're teaching your own child and you want to teach him Latin, well, there are online resources to learn Latin. Mm-hmm. Or you can learn it with your child.
That's one of our guests last week mentioned that she took Latin with her daughters while they were all three learning it at the same time.
Yeah, that's great.
What does a typical day look like with your grade school? You go up through eighth grade. What does a typical day look like for either preschool or kindergarten?
Preschool is in many ways a typical preschool, but we do teach phonics, and we do start our handwriting, especially for the older preschoolers, and just teach them the basic strokes involved, teaching them letters, and then reading to them, reading the fairy tales, the Aesop's fables, Bible stories. Of course, religion is a part of all this, and we can talk about that too. Kindergarten probably looks a lot like many first grader classrooms looked, at least when I was younger. The students we only have a half day kindergarten, and so our students have to cram everything in 4 hours time. But they learn writing, and they begin to sound out words with the phonograms. They begin their reading. Again, they're read to them. We teach them math. Pretty aggressively. We have a strings program in our school, so all of our students are taking violin, or with the older students, viola and cello and bass also. And so a part of their day is taken with that. But we start every single day with chapel here. And we use with the emphasis on the historic traditions of the church, we use our historic treasures, so our liturgy. We have matins or the divine service. We use the liturgy, the hymns of the church with our hymnal, and all of the students are introduced to that and know that, and frankly, they learn to love it.
And what about some of the higher grades? Maybe let's move up a little bit to third grade. What does a typical day look like for them?
We have, we begin with chapel and religion, and then they will go to spelling. So this is the application of the phonics program, and also some writing. And then, depending on which grade, they'll have... There's strings instruction, and they'll do math. There's always time for recess, of course. And then they'll spend usually an hour on composition, grammar, and literature, kind of those three subjects done together with kind of literature as the centerpiece to that. That's continued then, some of that in the afternoon, but especially in the afternoon, they will have Latin, then history, geography, sort of picking up, and science, sort of picking up some of those other things along with our PE class. So that's kind of the typical day for us. It's a very, very full mm-hmm. day.
Anything different about the higher grades, the 6th, 7th, 8th grade?
Just they, of course, are introduced to some basic logic along the way. Their literature becomes more complex. They do, in fact, read the Odyssey, the Iliad, the Aeneid over the course of the 3 years in our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, at least for the students that are prepared to read at that level, which you know, would be most of them. Latin gets pretty far through. Some of our students make it all the way through the traditional college textbook, Wheelock's Grammar, or Wheelock's Latin. So just kind of raising the bar. They spend a little bit more time in their strings or their orchestra time get familiar with some of the great musical works by way of what they play.
Logic really begins then in those middle school years, middle school, maybe early high school.
Right. The more formal study of it would, though, you know, we encourage our teachers, you know, really to think in terms of these arts in all of their classes. And so what most teachers will do with their teachers and with their students in the classroom is when they read something, they'll ask them, well, why did he do this? And, you know, what was the reason behind this? Why did it work out this way? Or when you're teaching history, developing, you know, a sense of those connections between events and cause and effect, that's really the teaching of logic. It's just done more informally at the lower grades.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to our caller now. We have another caller, Marilyn, with a question or a comment about Latin in third grade. Marilyn.
Well, I just wanted to say, I hope that all of these children that go there know how fortunate they are to get such an incredible education. You know, all of my children took Latin. Of course, it wasn't introduced until senior high school. And in fact, when my youngest went there for an inner freshman year, it was no longer taught. I wrote to every major education institution in the United States, and I got responses from most of them on the importance of Latin. Presented it to my school board, but our superintendent, and I don't want to belittle people that choose PE as their major, but in fact, he was a farmer coach. He had no idea the value of it. I had children in my classes that were from Asian countries and other places, and they didn't do as well on their ACT tests and that, and it was because they did not have the background of Latin. It is the best English.
Oh, bless you, Marilyn. I love to hear that, and you're absolutely right.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Come to our part of the country. I'm a retired public school teacher, and I'll tell you, I've been listening to you. I've just been mesmerized by it, and I thought, I hope all those children, and I'm sure that some of them think, oh, gosh. But, you know, later on they're going to say, wow, I was so fortunate.
Well, thank you for...
So thank you for your incredible work. This is just wonderful.
Thank you for calling, Marilyn.
God's blessing to
thank
all
you.
Of you.
So Latin, there is a great value in Latin in the classical education model.
There is. And you know what? It sounds like an obscure sort of arcane subject.
But, a dead language.
It's very practical in so many ways. And frankly, our students, if you teach them to love these things, they will love them. And, of course, I, with great humor, remind our students, this is your favorite subject. Of course, I tell them the same thing in religion when I teach it. But they actually agree with it. They love learning this. It's a lot of fun. Kids love to, you know, make up words or play with language. And there's a certain playfulness about language that they can have at those early grades. And it's just it's a perfect time to start picking up Latin. There's a lot of hard work in it, mm-hmm. Especially as you get further on. But, you know, we avoid the drudgery too much, especially in the younger grades. And they do well with it.
Do you find the children speaking and using Latin out on the playground?
Well, they do try to use their Latin from time to time. I'll never forget the child that made a Mother's Day card for his mother and had to write a whole bunch of Latin words on there because he didn't know how to, you know, do all the inflections, but he just wanted to have those words on there because he just was thrilled with the language.
And I think languages are engaging and for children that they quite often want to learn languages. For a number of reasons, but I think they are engaging. So a great choice, Latin, so that they can use that foundation for a number of other things down the road.
It is. And in fact, we've had a number of our students that have taken an interest in learning other foreign languages. And my goodness, to learn Spanish or French or, you know, any of the Romance languages, it's just an easy step from Latin into those. And they just thrive. They really do well.
Mm-hmm. With about 2 minutes left, the type of training or background that a teacher might need to teach in a classical Lutheran setting.
Yes, that of course is one of the challenges. We have not received this model of education ourselves, and so passing it on is difficult. I would urge, of course, first and foremost, an education in Holy Scriptures and our Lutheran confessions. Just an absolute essential for all of our teachers and certainly in the classical model. There, of course, has to be a knowledge and experience with lesson preparation and classroom management and things that are taught to our teachers in the universities, and those things are obviously indispensable. They have to be learned somewhere along the line. But really what is needed for classical teachers is just a good liberal arts education. The formal education is great if we can get teachers that have it. If we don't, we all then become students, and we are learning as we go. But well-rounded education, rich in content, so that they know not only how to teach math, but they know math itself, or how to teach history, but they know history well and can quickly do some research and prepare themselves to teach, you know, at any historic point in time. And sort of at the bottom of all of that, you can see is we need teachers that just love to learn. They're teachable. They love good theology. They love to read literature, history. They love the subject matter that they're teaching. And there's no more powerful way of making good teachers in the classroom than to have someone, you know, who actually enjoys the subject that they're teaching. And so that's what we're looking for.
We've been talking with Reverend John Hill, pastor at Mount Hope Lutheran Church and School in Casper, Wyoming. Thank you, Pastor Hill, for being with us today on Faith and Family.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Andy.
Wonderful. Well, God's blessings. And coming up next time on Faith and Family, we're going to continue our discussion on choices in education. We're going to talk about Lutheran day schools from a local Lutheran school principal here in the St. Louis area. And later on, we'll talk about Lutheran high schools, public school, and Lutheran residential school later on in the week. So I hope that our listeners can continue joining in the conversation. Stick around for Moments of Assurance up next right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.